happens.
I think sometimes we speak wistfully about the church in unity, that we hope that there might be one way that the church ought to look. If we could just all get on the same page, everything would be great. And as I've thought about that, if everybody could get on the same page as me, that'd be even better. As many of you know, I had a chance to travel to Indiana in the last month and to be part of the Quaker Leadership Conference at Earlham College, ESR, the Earlham School of Religion. And I was reminded of how diverse Quakers are. There's a lot of different flavors. I would have put up the pictures of some of the crazies, but I didn't have their permission. But, excuse me. There's folks in these Quaker circles who are still wearing plain dress, like the hats and the collarless stuff and the suspenders. And there's other folks who are on the other end of, you know, looking evangelical, whatever that means. There's a whole variety of friends. And part of me thinks, I wish it wasn't that way. And part of me thinks, no, that's absolutely the way it ought to be. That having different expressions of who we are in Jesus and who we are as communities makes a lot of sense. It turns out that there's never really been a time that the church is unified as in all the same. All it takes to notice this is to look at the New Testament. That most of the New Testament is comprised of letters to different churches. And as you read those letters to these different churches, you see that things are not the same in Corinth as they are in Philippi, as they are in Jerusalem, as they are in Thessalonica. These places have different things going on, and there are similar themes, but these are places that people are different and relationships are different, and they're trying to understand how God is working among them is different. And there's these issues like, how do we all get along with each other? What does it mean to be faithful? And so on. But even those specifics end up looking a little different in all these different churches and all these different meetings. Last week, Colin looked at a piece of one of those letters, the letter to the Ephesians. And it's a call to unity. It's a call to like-mindedness that Colin brought to us about how we grow up together in Christ. And yet, even in that, there's a continued theme of difference, that folks are knit together in their difference. And I'm misusing the metaphor. Paul was not talking about socks. He was talking about bodies. But this seemed like a really valuable idea of the vibrance of different patterns and colors and the ways that those things are brought together. Some of you are knitters and understand this better than I do. I think what you're doing is tying knots with sticks to make things. But it ends up with this beautiful, often beautiful patterns and diversity of the way that different yarns and colors come together. I think it's a really good perspective for us about, a really good paradigm for us about who we might be. And I love the idea of God knitting us together, even if Paul didn't know what knitting was. Paul affirms that the heart of the church is about relationship, which is not new. This is part of the whole message of being the people of God. First and foremost, that it's about relationship with God, rightward living, that is centered on attentiveness to God, walking humbly with God. Paul puts it this way to the Ephesians, walk in a manner worthy of the calling. And again, this is relational all through Scripture. We are God's beloved, God's children, God's nurtured and created. God wrestles with us, God comforts us, God calls us out on our dysfunction. But all of that is in the context of relationship. And the other piece of that relationship puzzle is that we're called to be in good relationship with each other. We journey together, we bless each other, we sharpen each other. As Colin so aptly demonstrated last week, we exasperate each other. We're meant to be in relationship. We're part of a body, part of a nation, part of a family. It's no wonder that Jesus said the whole thing can be summed up in loving God and loving your neighbor as yourself. And so here at North Valley, we're on the edge of sitting on the edge of who are we called to be now? What's next? And I do have to say, in some sense, encouraging North Valley to be itself is a little scary. We don't need a lot of encouragement to be unique or different. We're plenty quirky without encouragement. Yet the gifts we have to offer as a community of faithful God followers are just that. They're gifts. They are what we've been equipped to be, what we have been given to offer, and we should be true to that. And if we go back to the early churches again, it's clear that they were trying to figure this out as well. But one of the most consistent themes in those letters is faithfulness to the Spirit. And just the letters in the New Testament, so not including the Gospels or Acts or those addressed to people or Revelation, the Spirit is referred to over 75 times in this sense of we should listen to what the Spirit's doing. And one of the best summations of this comes from Galatians 5:25. This is from the Message. Since this is the kind of life we've chosen, the life of the Spirit, let's make sure that we don't just hold it as an idea in our heads or as a sentiment in our hearts, but that we work out its implication in every detail of our lives. Sorry, we're working out every implication of tech in the details of our lives. This is kind of what we sang earlier in that song, All of Me, that the Spirit would work out its implications in every detail of our lives. And it's in this kind of commitment to faithfulness to what God's doing among us and God's direct leadership in our lives that we'll find a way forward. The temptation, of course, is to codify what that means, to say, this is how it's looked in the past. This is how people have done this before, and that we're obligated to continue to do it that way. Or the forms that people have used are the forms that we're obligated to continue to use. Maybe it's easier to keep on doing those things that we've done in the past than it is to keep on trusting that if we listen, that God will show us ways that we can be faithful. We know how to do it that way. In many senses, we're comfortable with doing it that way. But the witness of the letters of the New Testament is that that way isn't always what God calls us to continue to do. One of the witnesses of people encountering Jesus meant that they didn't continue to do what people had done in faithfulness in their religious practice for years and years. They started to have to do things differently. So the question is, what is the Spirit doing in our midst? We're living in a time that there's a lot of questions that haven't been asked before, or maybe haven't been asked as consistently as they should have been. Who gets to be part? And who gets to decide who gets to be part of this community? What does it mean to be the church when the cultural power and entitlement of the church is now, that privilege is leaving? We don't have the same kind of influence within our culture that we used to have. It's not honored in the same way. And how do we address things like injustice or climate change and houselessness? How are we a people, a community, in a culture that less and less builds true community and care? How do we continue to exist as an institution that serves our community in vital ways? And these are all good and important questions, yet I think they miss the heart of the call. We can assume that there'll be answers to how we should proceed, but the core question is not how we meet these specific needs, but how is God calling us to be faithful? I think sometimes we're tempted to see this as like it's got to be some kind of mind-blowing and epic answer. That somehow this is just going to, you know, blow us out of the water and it's just going to be the silver bullet that solves all the problems. But it seems that often the Spirit doesn't work that way. There are times the Spirit shows up, I think, and tells us things that we never would have imagined. But usually, to me, it seems like it more connects with our normal rhythms, with the things that we most deeply know are true. That God often works through who we have and who we are, with the gifts that we know of. And I'm mindful of ways that I have noticed the people of God doing this. Many of you know about North Seattle and their quilting ministry. There was a group of people who loved to quilt. Some of those folks came and joined us. Carol Ann Palmer was core in that. And these are folks who loved to quilt and found that their quilt making began to bring healing to folks in the community. That they got connected with folks who were suffering from cancer. And they found that quilts brought peace and comfort to those folks in really vital ways. And that translated into a ministry in Africa and in Rwanda and recovering from the genocide there and giving folks means of making income and of comforting and reassuring each other. I often use a guitar strap that is quilted by North Seattle friends. And it's been a comfort to me as I've traveled and done ministry that I've felt called to do, to feel wrapped, literally, in the love of God because of these people's passion for quilting. And who would have imagined that God might do such an amazing thing through fabric? I guess sewing things together is not that far from knitting things together. I'm grateful for meetings who've had gyms. And I think of playing basketball with the community growing up, that from high school until about my mid-30s, until my knee said, you shouldn't really do that anymore because you want to walk tomorrow. That built a kind of community with multi-generational friends that I never would have had an opportunity to know in those other ways. It created friendships and connections that meant I was supported in ways that had nothing to do with basketball. But because we spent time together playing ball, we got to trust each other and know each other. I remember a time that I helped the yearly meeting superintendent up off the floor and calm down his temper after people ran him over. Not going to mention names. But that was so helpful and useful as a ministry, and it became out of the passion that folks had to play together. It wasn't a big thing. Just we got together and played ball every week. And it opened things in my life and other folks' lives to be supportive of one another. I look at our playground, which is a cool playground. If you haven't looked at our playground, it's pretty unique. And I see all the kids that play out there. And one of the things that's cool about being released in ministry here is I'm here during the week, and so I see folks show up from the community who have nothing to do with us, but know about our playground somehow. And I've tried not to say anything to our insurance agents about that, just in case there's liability. But it's really cool that we had a passion, that were folks who had ideas about what a playground ought to look like. And that created space for folks to hang out. Or the Peace Trail. Excuse me. That we know there's a friend in the neighborhood who used to walk all the time with his wife. And when his wife passed, he had no place and no community to support him in remembering his wife. But because he'd been on that trail, it left an opportunity to talk to us, and we were able to host that space. Often the work of the Spirit comes through pretty normal things that may not even seem like big deals, but they're true to who we are. They're true to what happens in our lives. As I mentioned earlier, I got a chance to travel across the country with my son Derek this last month, and we saw amazing things. This is Yellowstone Falls, which there's no way to get a picture of that that gives us scope. Those little trees that are about that big in the picture are probably 30 or 40 feet high. So if that gives you some idea of how big that falls is. We went through a place called Tinsleep Canyon, which is going over the Bighorn Mountains. That was, again, just no way to take a picture. We spent some time in the Badlands, which is just an incredible environment. That it used to be an ocean, and it shaped all these layers of sediment, and it's just amazing. And we crossed rivers like the Mississippi and the Missouri. And as I reflect on this, these landscapes are never the same twice. That's easiest to tell with rivers, because if you think about it, the water is always different. It's flowing through the river, so, you know, 1 second after that picture was taken. The Mississippi is a different river. It's different water. But the same is true of all the other places we saw, too. The way the sun shone on the rocks at the Badlands was different moment by moment, the way the clouds cast shadows. The grass was taller or maybe shorter as we went across the Dakotas, depending on whether the bison or pronghorn or cattle had been through there. Things are always moving and changing, and we have a tendency to want to say that's not true. There's comfort in regularity, but what's regular is things change and move. And we're at a time where the clarity of this is highlighted. And so it comes back to that question, as we work through this change, what is it that God is calling us to do? Who is it that God is calling us to be? What's on your heart? What's on your mind? What's on our heart and our mind? And it seems important to not force these things to be epic dreams or even fully realized dreams, but to allow these little movements in our hearts to have value, to resonate. I think often as kids, we're told how unique our gifts are and how our personalities are important and are special. We're encouraged in this, even if it's sometimes in sort of patronizing ways, that we might explore these things, that we might take joy in these things, that we might have something to contribute. Yet as we get older, often these things are set aside. Or we feel that we have to fit into some kind of mold, or to be faithful. We have to be a certain way. And I think there's pragmatic reasons that we need to mature. I was remembering as a kid, the 1 year I rode the school bus. It's only 1 year growing up. In my kindergarten year, I rode the school bus. And I had a friend that I sat on the bus with, and we had a big plan to build a rocket. I've got a picture of it there. It's my rocket. And our plan was to build this from the things we were going to find at the local junkyard. And we were really into this. But, you know, realizing as I got older that even if the junkyard we had found was right next to NASA, we probably weren't going to succeed in building a rocket. But I've also thought about how impactful those moments were with that other friend. I don't even remember the friend's name at this point. But how impactful that was to think about being creative, to think about dreaming, to think about going beyond just our little realities in Kansas at that time, to think about building bigger things. And we need our dreams. We need our dreams to mature. We need to, you know, I'm not planning on going to the junkyard to build a rocket anytime soon, but we need our dreams. And I'm mindful on a bigger scale, in the history of the church, that call has meant all kinds of different things. Think about the work of Bach, the composer, and that Bach's work was all done to the glory of God. Bach signed everything he wrote to the glory of God. And what an amazing composer Bach was. And anybody who's serious about music, or even if you're not, you've been deeply influenced by Bach. Bach is one of those pivotal people in the history of music. Well, last night I got a chance finally to connect with Nathaniel Ankeny, because I left for Indiana and then he left for Europe and I hadn't seen him, a close friend that I hadn't seen in almost 2 months. And he had these amazing pictures of the cathedral in Milan. And, you know, 50-foot ceilings and marble and mosaic and tile. And those folks did that for the glory of God. It was something they were passionate about, something they were good at. Or you think about even somebody like Isaac Newton, who was devoutly Christian. They say that Newton actually studied Christianity and faithfulness more than he studied anything else, which is saying something, because this is the guy who invents modern calculus and, you know, physics up until Einstein, and the telescope, among other things. And if you follow your thinking about this, those are not things that you really would anticipate people doing in the name of Jesus. Or at least not the kind of things that you would say Jesus would have anticipated people doing as a human being, like Jesus would have never known a piano or a pipe organ or a cathedral or a telescope. Those aren't things that obviously flow out of the faithfulness of God, and yet the way those things have influenced our world have been amazing. They've been profound. And that's not to say there aren't issues around these things. Cathedrals took an awful lot of energy and money to maybe do something that wasn't what Jesus was most about. And at the same time, they pull a lot of people to faithfulness. And if folks had only said, I'm only going to do the things that fit in the box of what the dream looks like, what a poorer world we'd have for it. So it makes me wonder, what are the things we're passionate about? What are the gifts that are inside us that sometimes we don't know what to do with because they don't fit within the box that we think faithfulness has to look like? What are the things that fill you with joy? What are the things you find on your heart and mind repetitively? And is it possible that that's the work of the Spirit within you, within us? That maybe there's amazing things that God is trying to do through us that we're not even willing to give credence to, or that we're not willing to be attentive to because we've been taught not to. What if, to take from Paul's words to the Ephesians again, that God's love is so broad and deep that it's beyond what we can understand, and that in that breadth and depth, that our deepest joys and deepest senses of calling are part of that? Because maybe we've been taught that things have to fit a church-shaped box. Or maybe we've been taught that there's a division between the secular and the sacred. But what would the community of faith look like if we weren't willing to put boundaries or limits on what the natural connectedness and rhythms and passions of our lives are? I want to be careful. I recognize that being a community requires intention, and things like having bathrooms and heat matter to us being willing to gather. Having led in situations where those things were not guaranteed, I can tell you it makes a difference to people's ability to be centered. But those realities shouldn't stop us from listening to what God is doing in our hearts and our minds and our lives. So here are some questions. What is it that you are truly excited about or by? What is your deepest longing? And how might God be calling us as a community, as a body, to be faithful to address that? What really fulfills you? And how might we as a community be able to give space for that, to give expression for that? And how might you and how might we do that for others? I think there's a temptation in this to suggest that if we were to pursue the things we really were joyous about, we were really excited about, that we just go off the rails and go all kinds of different directions. And yet I think the Spirit forms us together about these things. That as we listen about these things, we find ways forward about these things we're most excited about. That there's a joy in the depth of these things that we care so deeply about. Can we trust that if we offer these things to the Spirit, that God might be faithful to put these puzzle pieces together to make a vibrant community? I hope that's true. So we'll leave these questions up. If they're helpful, you can attend to them. If they're not, don't. And let's take some time to listen together to what's moving in us. Maybe it's not something you're ready to share yet, or maybe Christ is asking you to speak to us about that. So let's listen together, friends.